Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome. You're listening to Way of the Dreamer with Robert Mouse. I'm very excited. We have a wonderful guest joining us from Yorkshire today, so you'll hear her lovely accent in a moment. She is a dreamer. Her name is Romy Needham. We'll say a little bit about her in a moment. Let me just introduce a broad theme here, which I think you're going to enjoy. Our theme is dreaming with swans. Do you dream with swans? Do you know swans? Do you watch them? I think I've dreamed with swans myself all of my life. I remember within the last few years a couple of big ones, in one of which a swan, something sort of tickling and pushing inside my forehead, and something starts coming out. Sounds gross. Something starts coming out of the third eye area, and it is a swan. And now, of course, I'm fully lucid. So there's a sense of sort of some physical shock, really. And the bird emerges, and now I'm flying with it, I believe, as it's, I'm flying overseas in Europe. So I had that experience of actually flying as a swan, which was totally unexpected. I mean, I like swans. I think about them. I don't know them quite as well as Romy does. You're going to hear about that in a moment. Swans have a very big role in mythology, philosophy, folklore, etc. You know, you think about the Greeks. It is said that Socrates, before Plato came to him as a student, dreamed that a cygnet, a young swan, a baby swan, lands in his lap and starts growing and suddenly flies off into the sky. And Plato arrives the next day, so Socrates thinks this is the young swan. And Socrates is also the one who told us that the swan's last song is the sweetest. The swan is getting ready to go home to Apollo, for whom the swan is the preferred bird. We get it throughout mythology. We get it in Celtic mythology. There's a love god named Angus, dream god, love god Angus, who dreams of an impossibly beautiful maiden, Caer Ibamis, who is clearly of the she, of the fairy folk, and to win her, having fallen in love with her in a dream, he has to take the form of a swan. So he's a god shape-shifting into a swan to join his love of the fairy world, who is transformed into a swan every year. It goes on and on. Well, let's say a little bit about Romy before we bring her on. She's a lifelong dreamer. Her childhood dreams centered around visiting other lives, knowing that she was connected to something else. Her first memory, she told me, of a dream is of looking in a mirror. Have you done that? Looked in a mirror, seen something different? But in her childhood dream, Romy is saying, I know my name is Romy, but who am I? You had that sense, you wonder, perhaps looking in a physical mirror or looking at yourself in another way. Who actually am I? I'm Robert, but yes, am I something more? He received visitations from her grandmother when she was young. On the night Granny died and Romy was 12, Grandma came in a dream, and in a subsequent dream in the morning, Grandma showed up again and led Romy to say, it's okay. I understand. It was a body that died, but a soul has gone on. So that really confirms you're on the path of a dreamer. And one of the things about real dreamers is we know that something survives bodily death. Because we've been out there, we receive visitations from people who survive bodily death, and we go there ourselves. We travel beyond the body. Romy practices traditional Chinese medicine. I think if you want acupuncture anywhere within reach, look for her. In Radford, in Yorkshire. I'm sure she's very good at it. I haven't had the pleasure of experiencing it myself, but I know that she knows what she's doing. And very briefly, before we bring her on, she's a dreamer with her eyes wide open, too. I mean, the way she walks about this world is extraordinary. I'm sorry we can't show you her photographs, the fantastic photographs that she takes walking by a pond in a park in Manningham, which is in Bradford. are swans, a family of swans, and a male swan, who they call Swan Robert. I didn't make this up. He's called Swan Robert. And her relations with these swans in a park for 3 years are extraordinary. They pose for her. They court her. They give us the sense of our ability to fly as we watch them. And they've helped her with important transitions, including a very moving and beautiful transition of her father not that long ago, for which she was able to play the incredibly important role of soul friend. We can do that for each other. Welcome, Romy.
Thank you, Robert, and thank you for that lovely introduction. It's lovely to be here.
See how beautifully Romy speaks? So I'm going to say to Romy, let's picture this. We're going to settle down in one of your favorite pubs. I know that you and your father liked a pub called The Fox somewhere in your neighborhood. So it could be The Fox. It could be somewhere else. Let's find a quiet corner. Let's have a pint. And let's just talk as old friends, or not so old friends, who've been sharing dreams for a while, about what dreaming means in their life. And why don't you start us off, as we raise glasses, by telling us in your own way, really, what dreaming has been for you in your life? What does dreaming mean for you?
When you gave the introduction about when I looked into the mirror and asked who I was, that wasn't a dream. That was, well, it was a dream, but it was a waking life memory rather than a nighttime dream. And it was it was my first memory, and there was a real, at the time, there was a real sense of frustration that I could see my face in the mirror, and I could look into my eyes, and I knew that my name was Romy, and I knew that I lived in Bradford, but there was something more than that. And so I asked, who am I, and it sort of drove me mad, really, at the time. It really made me quite frustrated, and it felt then that I don't want to say made a deal, but it was an understanding that this is why I was here, to try to understand that of who I am and why I was here. So it became a lifelong road or mission that I'm still on, really.
Yes, it's a dreamlike moment. I wasn't sure whether it was a mirror in a dream or a mirror in waking life. It comes to the same thing as you talk about it. I think many of us have had that sensation, catching sight of ourselves in a physical mirror. We wonder, okay, is this it? Or we're shocked by how we look that day. Or we're startled to find that we are that person when we, perhaps in a dream or a meditation, were someone else. But
yeah.
It also happens in dreams. I routinely, well, it's not all that often, I guess, but at least once a year, I'll remember a dream in which I look in a mirror and I am someone else altogether. And actually, as you know, in my classes, where we do a lot of imagineering, I mean, wide awake lucid dreaming, enlisting the imagination, I'll have people go to a room where they look, perhaps at several mirrors or many mirrors, and they see other selves, and they're coming into connection, perhaps, with other aspects of themselves and perhaps with other personalities in times and places that are part of their story. So since you choose this strand from your life to start with, where has your quest to live that question, who am I, who is Romy, who else am I, where has that led you? What have you discovered? And what role have dreams and synchronicity played in your discoveries?
Well, the area where I grew up, as you said, Manningham, was an old forest and woods, like a lot of Yorkshire was. And it was, at one time, in the wool industry, it was the wealthiest area in Europe, with all of the mill owners, and there's absolutely incredible architecture everywhere. And when I was growing up, it was incredibly edgy, the city of Bradford. There was a lot of different things going on and, you know, some of it not very pleasant. And I found that I walked these streets I only needed to turn the dial. Even when I was very young, it was just a sidestep, really, to be able to feel the energy of the woods and the old forest and the deer and all the birds and I suppose it was, I started to understand that we live in a speaking land. So I think I've always been a waking dreamer, sometimes more so than I have been a nighttime dreamer.
All right, it's lovely that you're evoking the ancient forests and the deer woods and so on, of what became a very busy mercantile industrial city, didn't it? And it's been down on its luck, perhaps, for quite a while now. And here you are wandering this city with its shadows and its memories and its history. And here you are, and you come to your park, and there are the swans. So take us immediately now to your relationship with the swans. And there are other birds in your life and other moments of flight and synchronicity involving birds. But start us with the swans. And you take such poetic photographs of them, and you write such poetic narratives, too. Don't stand on the poetry, Romy. Take us with the swans into your wide awake dreaming with the swans.
My wide awake dreaming with the swans was in the winter of 2022 when the swan arrived to the water, and I hadn't had a relationship with swans before. I've had lots of deep relationships with different animals and birds, but not with the swans. And a swan arrived, and there was an immediate sense of love and connection and resonance and grace, and I started to become friends with this swan. And there was a real feeling that I knew that this was the start of a different chapter in my life, and something was yet to unfold, but I didn't know what it was yet. And this sort of went on for a little while, and then on the 22nd of February 2022, I had a vivid dream where I was delivering a workshop called The Energy of the Divine Arts, and it was a Victorian-style feeling, much like my area is where I live. And I delivered this workshop and felt very comfortable and confident about it, but wasn't really quite sure why I was there, really, in a way. And when I finished it, the door, you know, it felt like the door was bustling, bursting to be opened, and a group of beings came through the door, and they were shifting really beautiful faces and energy, and they were shifting from swans to what I felt was sort of angelic beings and back again. And there were some that were obviously quite the elders of the group. And they said that I'd got the job. They said, "You've got the job." And I came back to my bed then in the morning, laughing out loud to myself, saying I didn't even know I had an interview. So that started off this deeper dreaming relationship with the swans.
Before you go on, Romy, because, you know, I always like people to take action from their dreams. Whether it's the magic of synchronicity when the world around us seems to speak like a dream, or the magic of the night dream or the lucid dream. Have you tried to put together a workshop like that? Have you considered how you might get people to come to a workshop with that title and play some games together?
I feel that it's a work in progress, this Energy of the Divine Arts workshop. It's been on my mind for these years, about what it's a mixture of things to do with dreaming and healing from my acupuncture work. But it's not quite there yet. Part of my relationship with these swans, I feel, is going to be this workshop.
Well, I hope it will come through. It feels like it's time to take flight after, 3 years? Time is always now. And it seems like a very clear directive. I mean, I can think of directives as clear as that I have received in dreams in similar ways that I have not manifested yet. So they don't take this as any kind of real criticism. I can think of many very direct prompts I've received I haven't acted on yet. There's always something else to do. But if it's my life, it does seem to be such clear direction and such a clear step forward. Well, the connection of the swans goes on, and it's been important in your life in many ways. I imagine it must bring some matching into any morning. You simply walk by the pond, and there's Swan Robert posing for you and so on. But it's also helped in family transitions and so on, hasn't it? I remember, it's even helped in mediating and gentling the passage through death.
Yes, they have. When I developed the friendship with the swan, this sense that I had that something was around the corner that I didn't know. And actually, a month later, I found a joker card, as I often find playing cards in the street at turning points of life and transitions. And I found a joker, wasn't really sure the energy of it. And my dad was ill, and we weren't sure what it was. And then my dad was then diagnosed with a terminal illness in June, and it sort of made sense to me then that the swan had come along and that we developed this friendship and understanding and so on. And I was already seeing the swan as a source of guidance and support and kindness. So when Dave, my dad, had his diagnosis, he had 10 weeks then where he was dying, and he died at home, and I looked after him at home. And I felt that I had I didn't know where this sort of knowledge or wisdom, if you like, came from to be able to help him on his way. And it was the child in me sort of stepped to one side, and this other side took over to help him die well. And the swans were all there. I mean, other animals came as well during this time, but the swans were really a part of that transition. And as I was thinking about this conversation, I remembered a dream that Dave and I did together when he was dying, and he was talking about these different pathways that were opening up, and he was choosing which pathway he wanted to go down. And so I jumped into the sort of journey space and found myself in a really beautiful wood leading to the sea. And the pathway of the wood was marked by swans, and they also provided a source of light, like a flight path. And it was interesting because he was a month away at that time from dying. And some of them had the wings, stretched, but not quite ready to fly. And there was this light, and that was it then. And when I came back, Dave, it felt like he was really far away. And he just opened his eyes and he said, "Romy, what's that smell?" And there wasn't anything burning or anything. And I asked him what the smell was, and he said, "Oh, it smells like woods and a sweet meadow."
How beautiful. How beautiful. And what a blessing to have a member of the family, a close member of the family, who can play the anamkara, the sole friend in these most important transitions. And how beautiful to feel the winged glory of the swans guiding the way. And you make me think of one of my dreams of the swans, in which I found myself in a very strange and beautiful deep golden light, I mean like dark gold, very, very beautiful, at a place I called Swan Inlet, and the quality of the water was unlike any water I've ever come across. It was almost like honey. I mean, it was like heavy water, thick water, and the only birds or animals allowed on it were swans. Somehow or other, I won admission, and I'm allowed to swim and float on this water. I can't float in physical reality. One of my deficiencies, I used to be able to swim pretty well, but I can't float. I have to stay in movement. But in the dream, I'm in this glorious setting, and I know it's to do with transitioning to the other side, because only the swan people come here, and they can travel to the other side. And maybe they can come back. I'm thinking about a people of North America that you and I have talked about, the people of British Columbia, and their indigenous name is the Dunezá, which means something like the people. All North American indigenous people call themselves the people in their own language, or some version, some simple version of it. And as I told you, they have a great connection with the swans. They watch the swans, and as winter comes on, their swans migrate. Not all swans do, but swans fly south from this northern part of Canada. So they see the swans going south and then coming back, and they compare that with the ability of the dreamer, the real dreamer, to travel to the afterlife or another world and return safely. This is what the dreamer can do. And they say that the first of their dreamers was called Swan. His name was Swan. He's human, but his simple name was Swan. He has other names. And in their language, the word we translate as shaman or healer is Nachin, which means simply dreamer, one who dreams. So here's a people, not unique in the world, because the swan has such a role in folklore mythology, and I believe actually in the way that people see and perceive other realities. Here's a people for whom dreaming like is the good dreamer, the professional dreamer, the one who can help souls get where they need to go, like a swan, can fly to another world and return safely. I mean, that's really a beautiful thing. Well, we're talking to Romy Needham. She's in Bradford in Yorkshire, and we are in our imaginations sitting in a warm and friendly pub with a fire crackling, probably bearing a pint and talking about our dreams. And we'll be back in a moment. I'm going to tell Romy a dream from last night. It seems to be relevant, and it even mentions swans indirectly. So if you're willing, Romy, I'm going to lay one of my dreams on you, and perhaps you'll give me some feedback. Would that be okay?
Yeah, that's lovely.
All right, you're listening to Way of the Dreamer with Robert Noss. Our wonderful guest is Romy Needham in Yorkshire. We'll be back after the break.
Where can you find out about dreams and the dream world? MossDreams.com. At MossDreams.com, you can find out about Robert Noss, his work, and discover the way of the dreamer. Read numerous articles and essays on almost every facet of dreams. Find out Robert's class and workshop schedule. Read reviews and so much more. Visit MossDreams.com to find your way of the dreamer. That's MossDreams.com.
Robert Noss has a deep engagement with the dream world, and now you can take a crash course from this master of active dreaming at your own pace. That's right. You can get Robert's 8 exciting half-hour programs on a new DVD set called Way of the Dreamer. Share Robert's story as a dreamer and dream healer. This dynamic 3-DVD set can help teach you how to find your way through your dreams to realize your full potential. Don't wait to learn the practical dreamwork techniques that can help you understand how to attain better health, emotional stability, spiritual awareness, and more. Order Way of the Dreamer DVDs today from Amazon.com or MossDreams.com. That's MossDreams.com.
We're HealthyLife.net, reaching and helping a worldwide audience without hype, without shock, and without shenanigans.
Welcome back. This is Way of the Dream with Robert Noss. Hop over to my website, nossdreams.com. I'm doing a lot of online classes and trainings. Don't do much in person these days, but you can find me online. And you'll find a link to my blog. Yes, I've got an old-fashioned blog. Pretty good stuff is going on there. A wonderful guest is a swan dreamer. She talks to the swans just about every day in a local park in Bradford in Yorkshire in the UK. Her name is Romy Needham. You've been listening to her lovely voice. And Romy, I'm going to lay on you a dream from last night. That's actually from the early hours of this morning. Let me just tell you the dream, and then I'll look to you to give me some feedback or guide me through a simple process, if you like. You ready?
Yes.
All right, I'll give the dream a title. That's what I always ask people to do. And the title is something like, the caged bird is afraid to fly. The caged bird is afraid to fly. So I'm on a pleasant campus. I call it a campus. It feels actually more like a university than like a sort of holistic center. It could be a holistic center, but it feels like a university campus. And on my first evening, I have a very pleasant conversation with an elderly man who has something of the quality of a swami or guru, but doesn't wear any special clothes and certainly has, you know, no pretensions. I mean, he's humble, he's very learned, he's modest, and I really like him. I feel deep affection for this man. He seems very old, even older than me. And in the following day, I'm mentioning to someone how much I like him, and that I feel he's gripped by a deep fear, which few people sense. And first I'm talking to agrees, and then I'm back with the elderly scholar, let's call him. And I know it. I mean, he's frightened of death. I know he's frightened of death, despite all his meditation, all his years of practice, all his efforts at detachment, all his enlightenment. He's afraid of death. I know this. So I start telling him a very simple story. And the story goes like this. Here is a birdcage, a golden cage. And a bird has been living here for as long as it remembers. And it notices that the door of the cage is wide open. And beyond the cage, beyond the room, there are vistas of beauty and glory. All the bird has to do is spread its wings and fly out. But the bird is frightened. It's too frightened to go through the open door and leave the cage. And I'm looking at him, and he's looking at me, and his eyes become moist. And I don't know, is he asking forgiveness or understanding? He certainly has it. I understand him. I put my hand on his shoulder, and though he's the older man, I say to him with great affection, "You know, my child, this is how all humans are. And this is the dream." I'll add one thing. In the dream, I'm aware that I've borrowed the story. I'm aware this is not an original story about the caged bird. And I remember where I found it. I found it in the autobiography of a yogi, a famous book by Paramahansa Yogananda. By the way, Paramahansa means great swan. It's an honorific given to, you know, students of the way who've reached a certain level of distinction. Well, Paramahansa, the title, was conferred on Yogananda by his guru, whose name is Sri Yukteswar. And Sri Yukteswar, in Yogananda's sight, showed fear, a moment of terror or two, as his death approached. He was frightened of dying. And in commenting on this in his autobiography, Yogananda told the story. He said, I don't think he told it to his guru. He told it to his readers, you know, humans like this. And we're like birds in a cage who are frightened to fly when the door is open. So I'm mentioning that, Romy, not to sort of prolong it unnecessarily, but because I'm aware of that inside the dream, and I think the man I'm talking to must know the story too. I think it's probably helpful that he might be able to recognize that it comes from a source he would respect. So that's the dream.
And how did you feel when you woke up?
I felt
when you opened your eyes.
I felt wonderful. I felt really very happy that I had performed like this. And I also felt great empathy for the man I was trying to help. And I knew he'd help many others.
And do you think that it was taking place somewhere on the...
I have double thoughts. I have several thoughts about it, and dreams can have many levels. First of all, it's absolutely something that could play out in the future. I mean, I'm not running around giving in-person lectures and workshops the way I used to, but I could absolutely have this conversation. I mean, I'd be perfectly capable of talking to someone like this. That's realistic. Number two, I don't think it's going to play out in ordinary reality. It might be playing out in some parallel reality. Number two, it might all be a sort of dramatization of what's going on within me. I mean, the even older scholar might be the me who is conscious. He's close to death. So I have those thoughts that, you know, the dream might operate on all those levels.
It's listening to that dream, Robert, I immediately thought about the courage of the heart space and also the... away from the final death that I did, you know, with my dad. And I actually had an experience with my grandmother dying with with Swan influence as well, I think, but not long after my dad died. But it also reminds me of this ability to, for our souls to travel. It's a good reminder to me that our souls can travel, we can travel and then we can come back, and we can come back to this safe space and the safe place where we are in the cage of the heart, or the cage of the heart area, and we can come and go.
Right. So, Rami, if this were your dream, where would it lead you?
If this were my dream, it would lead me to go to the vistas more and spend more time exploring, more time realizing that it's not, you know, it's just a tip of a wing. If it were my dream, it's a tip of a wing to travel there and back. But there's also the other side of it, that's the preparing for the big flight out of here. If it was my dream, I'd be going along the lines of always being prepared for that big flight, like my dad.
Yeah, I think that's pointing in the right direction. That's the feather that is pointing in the right direction, perhaps beginning to write in the right direction. I have a lot of writing to do, and I don't have a swan quill to pick up to write with. I know you do, because you've got a whole collection of swan feathers. In my mind, I think that I need to write from this, whether I'm tapping it out on the keyboard or not, and I think I need a bumper stick, and I think it's going to be I will find my swan song. I will find my swan song. I'm not being morbid here, but they say the swan sings most beautifully as it approaches death, and of course I'm of a certain age, and although I've liked to think for most of my life that I have no fear of death because I've died and come back literally several times, there will be that moment, I'm sure, for me, as there was for Shri Yukteswar. I'm the scholar in my dream, so I will find my swan song. Thank you for helping me to explore the dream, and let's just note to people, when we offer feedback on someone else's dream, it's always appropriate to bring in our own experiences, as Rumi did, because they might be very germane. All right, you're listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Moss. We're going to take another break. We'll be back to dream with swans and other beings in a moment.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com. Get your personal dream symbols and discover the ones you dream about in Linda McKenzie's Symbols of You, a new book available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target, and more.
You're listening to HealthyLife.net, the radio network that brings positive talk with positive change to make your world a little better.
You're back with Way of the Dream with Robert Moss and Romy Needham, our swan dreamer, wonderful guest. You're in for a treat.
Romy is a great narrator. She's a great narrative storyteller, and stories are often woven from her daily experiences. And I think she's real willing to tell us a story involving her relations with her beloved and departed grandmother. So, Romy, I'm going to put you on to tell a story, and I'm going to be sitting in the pub, sitting back here, quaffing my beer and listening quietly for a while. You're on.
Well, talking about your last dream, Robert, and it was something that I wanted to, well, was hoping to say today, was after my dad had died, I went last year to release his ashes down in the on the south coast of England. Actually, the Fox Pub where we are now, that became a quite an important point for him in his dying journey, a setting sail point. And this Fox Pub is down on the south coast, in a place called Felpham, which is where William Blake lived. And he wrote some wonderful things down in Felpham. And he was actually arrested outside the Fox Pub. And so that's where my dad had said that he wanted his ashes. And he said that it was because he was down there and the sky had fallen down like a painting in front of his eyes, is how he described it. So my grandmother, who was 96, my dad's mum, she lived down there, not far away. So last May, on my birthday, I went down south with this really heavy box of bone ashes. And before I left, I wasn't sure whether I should take a few swan feathers with me to release with my dad's ashes. And I decided against it and went down with the ashes. Anyhow, there was a lot of different synchronicities, and I ended up on the same street with a lot of family connections to my grandparents. And I immediately found three swan feathers on that first evening before I was going with the ashes, and I thought, well, something else is at play here. I knew I'd entered into a different sort of time. I found the swan feathers the next morning. It was my birthday. Walked along the seafront, and the first thing that I came across was a dying fox. So there was nothing to do except to sit down with the fox while it made its way. So the fox took its last breath, and there was the sea breeze came, and it's all very dreamlike. So I went across to visit with my grandmother, went to take the ashes, and took Dave's ashes into the sea opposite William Blake's house with the three swan feathers, released the ashes, went back to my grandmother's, and the following morning I went for a swim at dawn, and it was a really beautiful, milky, almost like a Greek dawn. And I went for a swim and came out of the water and really had a sense that things were in the right place, and the ashes had been received, and that my birthday wishes had been received, and our birthday hopes. And as I saw all of this, I mean, I couldn't believe my eyes. Four swans came flying across the sea into this milky dawn. It was really incredible, and there were some swimmers who obviously go there swimming, and they were like, swans, swans. So it is quite an unusual occurrence for them to go across the sea like that. So I went back to my grandmother, and we travelled on to a family reunion in a different city. And on the way to this different city, my grandmother was talking about her mother and her grandmother, and how they're visiting her in dreams, and she feels them waiting for her. And she was 96, but I mean, she was the fittest, healthiest 96-year-old ever. She was a whiz on the computer. She loved FaceTime and email, and, you know, she was really smart. So I didn't really have any sign that she was on her last legs or anything like that. Anyhow, she talked about her family waiting for her. We arrived into this other city, Bristol, and all the family from Denmark arrived. And I immediately found three more swan feathers. And I still felt that I was really, you know, in this different time. It was a different quality of time. And we, on the final day, we all went to a restaurant for a meal before the Danes went back. And we got our menus, we sat down, and Zara, my grandmother, she just put the menu down on the table, and she looked to the distance, and she said, "Just give me a minute." And within the 10 seconds that I felt this rush of energy that I had to go to her, and it was only about 10 seconds when I crouched down next to her, she'd left her body, she'd gone, she'd died there at the restaurant table. And I, it was like a door had opened. It's really the only way that I, this scene in the restaurant was like something from a film and book, or, you know, definitely something like a dream. She'd left, it was like the clock struck the hour, and she left her body. And so I went back to her flat and looked out the window one last time, and there was a mama fox, this time a living mama fox with four cubs, looking at me from the window. So I knew that, you know, everything was okay. And I came back to Bradford, and I needed a few days to settle down. Obviously, you know, it was still a little bit shocking. And I made a date in my mind with Swan Robert that I would go see him in a few days' time, and I knew this date, it was solid. When I went to the park, Swan Robert, everything went silent. It was as if we were all waiting. The energy, like, shifted. It was sort of electrical. I was no longer in this very different time that I had been for that trip, but it was still a different energy. And all the birds of the park were quiet, and it was like we were waiting for something. And then Mama Swan came out onto the water with the three cygnets, and they just hatched. It was the first time that she brought them out onto the water, and so I observed Swan Robert meeting them for the first time.
So he introduced his family that day. By the way, Swan Robert is not me. Swan Robert is a name that Romy discovered had been given by persons unknown to me, to this male swan on this pond in Manningham.
I didn't give him that name.
I don't have to jump in, because people just listening to us now might think, what is she talking about? Well, his name is Swan Robert, not conferred on him by Ray of Remy, and certainly not by me. But he is, I see her photos, and he is splendid. He performs for you. He's really waiting for you, and he puts on a show for you every time you go there.
Yeah, and he knows my moods, which is why I've come to realize how aware and tuned in to the fields that swans are. You know, I have a mood when I set off, and by the time I get there, he's sort of displaying a response to that.
Well, this conversation is taking us deep and far, and I hope you're enjoying Romy's lovely Yorkshire accent as I am. We're going to take one more break. You're listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Moss. We'll be back in a moment.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you are interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
You are listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Moss. We've been talking a lot about swans, and particularly with our guest, Romy and Edom's extraordinary relationship with swans, especially in a pond in a park in Manningham in Bradford in Yorkshire, but apparently everywhere. And I know it's not only swans. She is a bird lady. It's owls, it's herons, it's finches, it's all sorts of things, isn't it? But the famous one, for just a moment, in one of the Hindu scriptures, actually, let's go to the Upanishads. This is very simple. In the Upanishads, the dream soul is called a swan. It said, I think this is in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, the great forest book, which is about the oldest of them. It said that the dreamer leaves the nest of the body like a lone swan traveling. And does all these certain different things and then returns to the nest of the body. That is the metaphor that is made. The dream soul, the dreamer in their dream soul, is the swan, the lone swan, traveling from the nest of the body and then returning. Except we know, of course, in dreams we're not always alone. Sometimes we have dreams which we meet other people. It can get confusing, can't it, when people tell you, oh, I dreamed of you, we did this and this together, and you have no recollection. I have the situation all the time because lots of people follow me and know me as a teacher, etc. So I have to cope with people who are telling me adventures that they had with me or simply sightings of me of which I have no recollection. However, I will say this. Dreaming is social as well as individual. It's transpersonal as well as personal. And we do meet other people. We do things together. We can do this with or without conscious intention. And also, something recognized by all indigenous cultures I know anything about, and by most ancient cultures at some level of their evolution, they've all recognized that we have separable souls or soul parts. Some part of our soul or one of our souls flies from the body in dreams, leaving something that keeps the soul going. Romy, as a student and practitioner of traditional Chinese medicine, has names for these different soul aspects, like Hun and Po, which can be invoked in you and are very useful if you know enough about that tradition. I notice this cropping up all over the place. We won't get into a detailed anatomy of energy and soul and so on, Romy, or else we'll leave people with headaches, but what's your view about this? I mean, about the idea that we have different components of soul or spirit and energy, and some are able to leave the body quite easily in dreams and other ways, and some stay put. What light from your study and practice of Chinese medicine can you throw on that kind of question?
In Chinese medicine, or Chinese thought, that, you know, there are those smaller souls, smaller spirits, if you like, make up what they would call a big spirit. And they all have, you know, different spheres of function, spheres of consciousness. From my personal life as a dreamer, I can't say that, for example, the Hun is the one that is supposed to be able to travel outside of the body, and it's the one that will leave after we die and carry on. And it's housed by the liver. But I can't say that I've ever made a connection that is in my liver. That's just from my personal experience. But I do have, as a lifelong dreamer, I do have different parts of me that come and go, and different parts that stay, and different parts that can be projected. But I feel them more in my third eye and in my heart, and sometimes in my crown and sometimes in my solar plexus. So I'm not sure that I can say that I've seen a
That's very helpful, because that's direct and experiential. I feel the same way. We've been having a discussion recently in one of the social media platforms that I use about what is the seat of the soul, or the seat of the soul, plural. And the liver, there's a big case for the liver, according to many traditional energy anatomies. And I can understand why the liver grows itself back. It's associated with this and that. People used to cut up the liver in divination, haruspicy, etc. The Mesopotamians, the Etruscans, were keen on that, so they thought something big was going on in the liver. But I don't know that I've ever felt, when I've been conscious of traveling from my body in some aspect of myself, That's baking off from the liver, from the solar plexus,
no.
Yes. From the heart, yes. From the mouth, yes. From the third eye, absolutely. I told a swan story. From the fontanelle, from the top of the head.
Yes.
And occasionally I felt something trying to separate by pulling out through the soles of my feet some aspect of my dense, heavy energy. I've usually resisted that because it felt like it might be taking me to the wrong place. But I've never, I think, really felt a separable soul, an aerial soul taking off from the liver. I don't know. The general point is that you and I are in agreement, and every indigenous culture is in agreement, that in dreams, at least in interesting dreams, we might go traveling. And what is traveling is not just a bodiless thought form. It is an aspect of ourselves that has its own subtle substance. It's a vehicle. It's a vehicle of consciousness. Call it the astral body. Call it the dream body. Call it the hun,
yes,
or the aerial self. Something is traveling.
And I think that's why, it's beneficial for all of us dreamers to want to know or to understand something of energy as if we want to go back to the beginning, that everything is energy, because it gives us some way to, discern patterns and discern things. And that was something that I learned early on in my Chinese medicine practice. I could feel everything, feel the breeze coming in, and then it's very hard to discern then what's coming from where, really, which is why I always like to practice, and it's a way to refine the energy and refine the chi and refine the ways that we can travel. But
right.
I think that some of it's...
And the best way to study these things is through first-hand experience, right? I mean,
yes.
Then we'll use what models of understanding, what templates, what charts most appeal to us, whether it's a Chinese or Taoist one, or whether it's a Neoplatonist one, or a Kabbalistic one, or something from somewhere else. When you're talking about the energy bodies and about feeling things in a physical or quasi-physical way, Yeats, who never really came up with a comprehensible nomenclature for all of this, but Yeats liked to call what I think he was referring to, I think he was referring to the astral body, Yeats liked to call it the passionate body. I mean, featuring the idea that we have a subtle body beyond the physical that knows pleasure and pain and might be moved by desire and passion at least as much as a physical body. And I think there's some truth in that.
Yeah, I think so. And I think also that it's the more that we travel, the more we realize that it's not, it isn't really contained, which is why I'm not sure about it only belonging to the liver, housed by the liver and so on. Because it's not contained in that way, same as that I don't think mind is contained in this sort of neat little boundaried place when we are travelling.
Okay, all right. So, Remy, I mean, you're young, but when the door of the birdcage opens, will you be ready, do you think?
I will be ready. I can imagine that we... thinking back to my dad's, because experience that I've had firsthand of watching someone's process, I'm sure that he had a minute of feeling scared, but then he went for it, and that's what I'm prepared for, to feel some trepidation, and I think that we all will have that. But no, I'll be
ready. as Yogananda's guru did. I mean, here's a man who's devoted his life to spiritual detachment from the things of this world and is supposed to be ready for moksha and all of that. And he has a moment of fear.
Yeah.
The bird who's been in the cage for a whole lifetime is going to be hesitant, right? But still,
I mean, we may have a moment of fear before we come.
But if the swans are on your side, you can spread your wings. And if you've done a lifetime of dreaming, you've done some good preparation. Because dreaming is perhaps the best preparation for traveling beyond the body. All right, we're going to take another break. Then we're coming back really just to say dream on.
Yeah. Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Thanks so much, Romy Needham, for helping us to spread our wings and fly like swans. Thanks for sharing your wonderful stories.
Thank you, Robert. It's been so lovely to be here and talking to you. Thank you.
And for all our dreamers, fly high on shining wings.